talk a little bit about kind of your journey into games and how you got there and what kind of pulled you in?
Yeah, so my dad is an economy teacher in the university, so that kind of was my first path. I kind of saw myself going into economy and studying that. But then I had kind of like a realization. I think it was like my first job, like real job, was as a clerk in a video rental store, like for movies. And that was like my first 3 years, maybe, since I left school. And that kind of really horned in like a big fascination for movies or interest for movies, because you could rent movies for free there. This was before Netflix, so getting movies was not as like obvious back then as it's now. So I could watch a lot of old movies and stuff like that. And for me, that was kind of like, maybe this is kind of like what I want to do, because I painted a lot when I was a kid, like painted Donald Duck and so on. So I had like, when I was a kid, I had like a comic book artist a little bit as a dream, but yeah, so I basically looked around, and I would say like the biggest possibilities was maybe movie producers and stuff like that in Sweden for studying. And I kind of wanted to do more like the art side. So I was imagining like working for Pixar and stuff like that. So I was like, I guess like video game art is the same as movie art, because I had no clue about it. So I just jumped into a school for video game art in a small town in Sweden. Without knowing what it is. And I would say I kind of fell in love with the process making video game art or working on video games. And that kind of like made me kind of stay in video games and not moving forward to movies. So yeah, I started it at school and kind of got a lot of connections and stuff like that. And it was very fun to see kind of like that school had like the same structure that the studio has. You had programmers, musicians, artists, designers, writers. So you kind of got that feeling of working in a game, basically. And I think after first year in school, we went together, a couple of friends, and we started a studio in the school computer room on the Sundays. So we're sitting working every Sunday as makeshift game developers, and we took like an idea without knowing Unity or anything, and kind of like learned by doing this game, and one led to the other, and we started traveling to like the GDCs, the E3s and stuff like that, and start talking to some publishers, and we were lucky to get Goodbye Kansas to invest in us, giving us a studio and so on. So we could sit with this during the time at the school. So that was kind of like, I would say that school maybe, and that usually talk people about a lot. This school was mainly focused on like, it was a university. So it's more about writing your master thesis and stuff like that. So I would say maybe not the best preparation for a career in video games. So having that studio on the side really helped, kind of learning the skill. It was basically doing two courses at the same time, I felt like, almost. And you got like a lot of other skills, like running a company has so many, you have to wear so many hats. So that was kind of like I'm kind of happy having that introduction to the industry.
So, sorry to interrupt you. Can you talk a little bit about kind of Sweden in games, because I've been there probably once and I was super impressed by how kind of vibrant, and there is a vibrant community. There are so many studios and new games are being built there all the time, and there's like these big studios like Machine Games, but there's like a lot of smaller ones. Tell us a little bit about how this country kind of works with games, and also maybe touch a little bit on the education side of it, because you mentioned that there are universities and schools. How do people kind of learn about this craft of making games?
So I think that's kind of like the interesting part of Sweden. We are only 10 million people, but I think we have probably like top five of video games studios in the world, like for country. Compared to, for example, I'm half German, so I can see like Germany struggling a lot with like creating video game studios. As I understand it, for Sweden, the main reason is we have one generation earlier with computer, home computers, than other countries, because our government subsidized, kind of gave money to buy home computers in the 80s, early 90s. Which created a lot of modders basically in the 90s. And all those modders created like the first studios, like you have DICE, for example, or Avalanche and so on. And all of those studios kind of like kind of had like big visions and created like big games like Battlefield or Just Cause or Machine Game with Wolfenstein. And I think now what we see is that a lot of the senior people that have been there for like 10 years or maybe 20 years even, they branch out and create their own studios. So right now we have like a immense like new studios starting up all the time. And these are more like 2A studios, but they have experience that is like insane, like it's like 10-20 years people and a couple of them, and they know kind of like how to steer, and maybe when they are a little bit like smaller, they can do it their way instead of like following like publishers and stuff like that. So I think that's going to be kind of like the new wave, and that started like 5 years ago maybe. So you had like even big studios opening up by seniors there, like Ubisoft and so on. And that's the cool thing for people working here, that you can basically kind of work on whatever game you want, because there is so many styles, because there are so many studios. And I think when it comes to the education, the nice thing with Sweden, which I know that not everyone has that possibility, is that we get to study for free. So it's not as the same risk as maybe in America to go into video games. So I think a lot of people try it out and maybe it becomes something else, but it basically time and living costs that you kind of like has the risk. But we also have a system in Sweden called how can I explain this? So we have like university, but we have also kind of work universities, which are not, you don't get a master degree, but what they promise is that you get job after work. So you have like Future Game and you have Game Assembly are the two big ones. And I think they need to kind of have a quota of 80 people, 80% of the class needs to get a job to be able to get funding from the government. And that kind of forced them to always be on top of getting people industry ready. And you get a lot of good people out of those schools, basically. So our studio contains a lot of Future Gamer, for example.
It's amazing to see when there is like this big market, which is in a smaller country, right? And then suddenly those universities and schools pop up and kind of like more life has been built into it, and eventually you get more very nice looking games, because when you think about games coming from Sweden, you usually think about like very high quality, you know, high graphic fidelity. It's not like your average, you know, you think about DICE and you think like it's like the almost like a number one new technology every time, like every new release is something like more inspiring in terms of art. But we talked a lot about the industry in your country, as well as how this industry helps build kind of schools all around. And I know that you're currently working at Vertex, and this is a little bit of a different different beast, right? It's online. Tell us a little bit about how you got there, and more importantly, like, what do you do there? Tell us about your course and how do you kind of help students grow?
Yeah, I want to start with saying maybe that for me, I actually did something similar going to online teaching, because I kind of realized when I went to school, I didn't go to those work schools. I went to a school where you didn't have to have like a portfolio to apply. And my teaching was not that good. So I had poly count. I think level 80 started a little bit later, like basically yeah. when I ended school there. So there was not that much information. So I went to one of those online school that doesn't exist anymore. And for me, being able to have, I had a teacher that worked on Guild Wars, which was very inspiring to kind of hear the stories, taking away the bit of the fear and so on. So I always thought like, yeah, I kind of want to do that when I have the experience. So I got the possibility to jump on Vertex School like 2 years ago. So I've been there for 2 years. And I'm mainly focusing on environment art. So I have like my class of 5-10 people around that, where we go through like two terms. The first term is basically just learning about Unreal and environment art creation. So I would say the first term is very like a little bit bumpy road, because it's so much to learn when you're an environment artist. Like you have the technical side, you have the artistic side, but then you have all the tools, and which tools do you need to use for which to get which result. And I think that's where I come in and kind of like guiding people to kind of like, yeah, maybe try this tool. Or this is how you find information for a tool, because I think that's mainly the important skill that you can learn as an environment artist, is being good at figuring out like how to navigate in this sea of tools and ways of building stuff, because there is not one right way. I think I always been kind of open to learning like with different ways of doing the same thing. And I think that comes from my indie time a little bit, where you had to kind of like test out things a lot. And I think that for me, together with like a good storyteller, is what kind of like makes a good environment artist. So I kind of focus on that things. And then if you have the interesting of technical skill, I would say like then you move towards maybe a little bit more technical artist and so on. And we have those possibilities at Vertex School also, that you can kind of study that. So I think, and that's what I really like with Vertex School, is that they don't stay static. Like every term, they kind of like look at the environment of the industry and kind of try to navigate what would be important for a student to leave us with skills, basically. So right now, like Unreal 5 has become like a very important tool for not only video games, but also like movie production. I mean, you have it in sports television, weather television, and so on. So I think like now it's like the craze of good Unreal developers is kind of big. And I see that myself, like I get asked by other kind of like other workplaces to if I'm interested. So it's not only video games now, which is kind of like fun. And I think like the skills of an environment artist can kind of be pushed towards other endeavors, which is kind of cool. And I think it's hard to know if video games is kind of the calling for you. So that's kind of the nice thing to kind of learn the skill, and then being able to gain, maybe move towards, I don't know, movies or Meta or VR or so on.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomized genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM, then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favourite podcast platforms now.
Yeah, it's nice to have kind of a little bit of variety, and it's also interesting to see how Unreal did this jump. Because I remember like the UDK, or even later before that, I remember the Unreal Tournament editor, which was like my first introduction to what Unreal kind of could do. And now you see it like you said, like in a weather forecast or somewhere. And that's a very interesting development. And here, like on 80 level, we kind of always we talk a lot about art, sort of like the, you know, composition, the color theory, and all those things. But at the same time, our focus is still technology, right? So we talk about like Unreal 5 a lot, and we featured a bunch of games made with this. And we talk about other tools as well. And I think in 2022, you kind of saw this probably yourself, where kind of like new tools are clashing with you know, the ways people are used to do things. And I'm not talking right now about like the ethical questions of how those tools work and so on, but I want to ask you kind of like a broader question. What do you feel is gonna happen with the workflows, with the way we build games in the next, let's say, like 5 years? Because I'm gonna share my theory, and maybe you can build on top of that. So, games is kind of like that industry where they really embrace all the new technical tools very quickly. It's like one of the probably games, and only then goes movies and kind of like all the other things. And we saw, you know, very quick adoption of like photogrammetry. Like we talked about DICE. This is probably one of the studios that really pioneered this and created amazing games using that tech. We saw a lot of adoption for tools like, you know, Substance Painter and Substance Designer, right? So we're completely changed the texturing flow for games, right? And now we see a lot of tools that are based on different AI algorithm. I'm not talking about like just Midjourney or those kind of things, but I'm also talking about tools that help you, you know, capture reality and then use algorithms to fix and clean the models. I'm talking about algorithms that can turn a 2D image in a 3D model like very quickly. They are still kind of like in development. It's not ready for production yet, but again, material work. There's so much work, even like Adobe itself is doing a lot of work there. And
all of those tools, basically their main goal is to cut the production time, right? So you just want to build stuff faster. You just want to spend less time kind of like working on other simpler, devote your time basically to other things. But at the same time, there is a question, what's going to happen with all those people who are, you know, been their whole career, they were like material artists, or their whole career where they were doing something else. I'm pretty sure that if you're very good at it, you'll still have a job, right? So you will still have, you know, you will learn the new tool and you will be okay. But what's your take on it? Because you're in the industry and at the same time you're in education. Do you feel like these new tools, it's just gonna mean more games which are gonna be produced at a faster time? Or is there something else? Like, do you see how it's gonna influence the job market maybe, or some other things?
Yeah, so I would start with like the idea of like video production and so on. It's I think the reason why we are so open for technology to involve quickly is because our like the idea of games are always becoming bigger and bigger, like how games should be, but the cost of games are always staying static. So I think that's kind of one reason why video games studios need to be kind of like smart about the workflows and so on. And I think like when it comes to like Midjourney and stuff like that, I think studios are going to be a bit careful touching that early on, because I think this year and so on, it's going to be a lot about the ethical part, but also the copyright part. So I think similar as you, that maybe is not going to be the biggest impact on the video game industry. I think maybe programming, like you see with ChatGPO can probably like help programmers to work faster, because as I understand, programmers are using a lot of Google research and so on to make stuff happen. And I think having that bot to your side helping you instead is just going to make everything fly faster. And I think I always been kind of like at the view that like AAA for me was a fun experience. I was in AAA, but I think it's a very slow process and it's a very dangerous process because you have so much money involved in it. And it's very hard, like if you see a studio or a project as a ship, it's very hard to like navigate that ship so heavy compared to like 2A or even indie, where you can kind of like navigate very fast. And that can be depending on like how does the market look like? The market changes also very fast, like what type of games are interesting for players and so on. And if it takes like 5 or even 10 years for a game to develop, then you're going to be probably too old when it comes to like gameplay and so on, even if you update the design. So I think game production needs to kind of like keep that pace, but still being bigger and bigger. And I think that's where you have like AI tools coming in. And I think I think the first things to kind of like being looked at is probably like more like in terms of 3D would be maybe prop creation. But for me there, it's like, if you look at the industry now, it's mainly outsourcing that's doing that. It's very rare that you in a big production, you do a lot of props. You do a couple of props to kind of like fill out the gaps and so on. But I think in a studio, it's more about kind of creating the hero props and then kind of driving maybe the quality that you put out to the outsourcing and so on, and the storytelling. I try to have a positive outlook on it. I hope that it's just going to create like more studios that are kind of like smaller and can kind of like create a vision that they want to create. They don't have to like follow the stream, so to say. And that's why I play a lot of indie games, because you can kind of like see a little bit the future of maybe what games in the future can be. Because now like indie has always been like the problem, that you have to like create 2D games because it's so expensive to create 3D games. If it's 3D games, it's probably like low poly style. So kind of the vision has always been like the visual vision has been driven by production cost when it comes to indie studios. And I think that's something we're going to see maybe like with photogrammetry, like that becoming easier. Like you told us that, like we are getting tools that can clean up photogrammetry much faster, because that's been an issue before, that it's still a slow process. But now with that, and together with like Quixel library, you can have like small studios creating like really nice looking games. And I think already like you have like, what was that game from China called, like with a monkey, like Black Mesa or something like that. Yeah. I think that was made by like 70 people or something like that, but it looks amazing. And the cool thing there for me is that you see kind of like a different take, because like you haven't got so many games from China that is in the AAA realm. So I think we're just going to get more crazy, like cool ideas when more people can create video games. So I think that's kind of the beginning. And I think like probably like the biggest studios are looking, we already in the big studios, you have like AI or procedure workflows that helps fastening process. But what that done so far, what I can see, it's not kind of like taking jobs in that terms. It's more like you just create more content, basically. Yeah. And I think like with Meta becoming probably a thing, maybe not like Facebook's version of it, but Meta in terms of social platforms where you meet people, like that's going to need a lot of content. And that's where you probably can get like AI helping out also.
Yeah,
it's nice that you kind of underline these. First of all, thank you for the optimistic outlook. I think this is something that we definitely need, especially in the current environment where everybody's kind of a little bit jittery. I like your comments on the metaverse, saying that this is more like a, basically it's good for us as you know, game developers and game artists in particular, because it does require a lot of content that you will need to find ways to kind of, you know, do the chairs or do the props and do the other things. But I also really enjoy this idea of kind of cultural expansion in terms of games, because if you look at like you know, games made in the United States and games made like in Sweden and then games made in Japan, they are very different. Although they might look like there, it's like the same concept, but they are very different. Like in, especially like the Japanese games, right? When you look at them, it's like it's a completely different take on design in general. And maybe this is why they are so successful. So it would be nice to, like, if these tools become more available and cheaper and at the same time more productive, because the output is increasing, right, with the with all those AI tech and you know, other technologies. What would a game from like South Africa look like, right? Or what would a game from, you know, like a little town somewhere in Brazil look like? Because Brazil is something that's kind of really popping up, and there's like more and more games there. And then you'll see this kind of mix, because there's going to be developers kind of traveling around the world. They're going to be joining different studios, and you will see kind of like more new innovative ideas. And to kind of like build on top of what you said, it seems to me that this is already happening in the indie kind of segment, because those studios are small and people are coming from all over, and you see suddenly like small Korean games popping up, right? Or small games from China, and they are just kind of like a different take on what games can be. And this is very inspiring, and I also feel like it's very good for the market itself, because it's we talked today a lot about how this is like the first generations of basically bringing up kids, and that first generation, those people who are in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, they already have a very sophisticated palette in terms of like what do they want from games, and they just don't want to maybe play something that's they've played for like 600 times before, you know what I mean? So having these new games, thanks to these new tools, is sort of like a blessing, because it keeps kind of this industry alive, and there is interest, because I think the CEO of Netflix said that their biggest competitors are like sleep, Fortnite, and something else. But it works the other way around, right? It's for video games, the biggest competitors are also like streaming services, TV, you know, you name it, like Netflix or just life in general, because when you're 50, it's not really that you can devote so much time to playing games. So yeah, that's interesting. So I want to kind of finish up on something also related to games, and I'm sure you know 80 Level, we kind of started a lot as an environment artist website. We still cover environment art a lot. And for me, environment art is something like when it's very close to like a vertical slice, when there's like there was nothing there and suddenly this guy decided to build like a little shiny little thing. And for me, it's always like very exciting, because I want to see more of that world. I want to kind of explore more of it. So it's always fascinating to see what environment artists can do. So from your point of view as a teacher and also as a, you know, active developer, what games are out there that really inspire you in terms of environment art? I know you mentioned Last of Us, which is obviously great, and it's we can talk for hours about how this game influenced. I think it really did. It did influence our whole perception of what is environment art.
for me, like my generation, I think most people, like my generation of video game artists, like environment artists, all of them has like Last of Us, that kind of silver line game that they can drive them to become better artists. I would say for me now, I try to play games that are maybe on the 2A, like 2A side or even indie. So I don't play that much AAA anymore. Like I still kind of like do it as maybe more like keeping up with the games and so on. So I would say like I recently played Somerville, created by one of the people that made Limbo and Inside. I thought that was like visually very, very interesting, like to play with like the audio together with the environments, creating like a interesting path when it comes to, like music and running around in very beautiful environments. I would say like creation games have kind of been the big thing still for me. Like I started with Minecraft like 10 years ago. We got Valheim like 2 years I think ago. Played that a lot. And the cool thing with those games, it started with like just a couple of people with an idea, and then they became like bigger than many AAA studios. And I think that's for me is very inspiring that you can have an idea and believe in that idea. Because that Valheim game was created in the town where I studied, and like Goat Simulator comes from there also. So it's that studio that in that place has like a lot of those smaller ideas, but people believe in them and they keep going, and maybe it takes like a long time because there are very few people, but then it comes out and you create like inspiration for the next person. I would say It Takes Two was very cool. Like if you look at bigger games, especially during Corona, I played it with my girlfriend who was in Japan. So we played it from Sweden to Japan, and being able to play a game like that. And kind of for me, like growing up with a couch experience, like playing games in couch with split screen, which has disappeared a little bit, I feel like. Bringing that back, I kind of like the idea. So I would say maybe those games for me, like as an environment artist, but also as a game creator. And I would say that for me is kind of like what I try to do now. It's not to similar to you, like not only stay in environment art. I try to kind of like maybe think of the future as more of a game creator. So probably that's something I also see if we're going back to like the new tools that gonna kind of like being able to maybe be alone creating or just a couple of people creating what you see in front of you. Like I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you for sharing that. And all of the games you mentioned, they're amazing. I mean,
yeah, you mentioned Stray also. I really liked Stray. I played that one.
And Stray also has very nice environment art. They also.
The cool thing is it started by Coolia.
Yeah,
who was like the big name on Unity forums when I started. And then he went away to create a game, and then he came back like 6 years later with like an amazing game.
Yeah, and like to your list, I would add probably, I mean, I'm not going to be super original here, but I would add Elden Ring. Because there's just, it is so massive, and they added so much stuff there. And there's like I don't think it's like biomes, but they're like the variety in terms of like how they play around with, you know, space and look and color and effects. It's just it's insane.
It's also cool because open world has always been like people are a little bit like tired of open world, but I feel like they kind of it was their first open world game, and they kind of took it and made it somewhat like original, like because open world game has had like the formula the last 10 years, and I feel like I haven't played Elden Ring, but I've read about it and watched it a lot, and I'm probably gonna pick it up eventually. And I think that's very cool. And that's kind of like coming back to like having a studio from a different place, kind of creating a game.
So what's your favorite game of all time?
I'm going to be boring and say Last of Us. It's kind of like shaped me into an environment artist. So I would say probably Last of Us.
It's first or is it second one?
The first one.
First one.
Yeah.
So what is, do you feel is like the most underrated game that you feel the world should learn about?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I played Outer Wilds a couple of like 2 years ago. I would say that maybe would be a game that I hear some people talk about it, they play it and they see the brilliance in it, but I think Outer Wilds would be maybe the game I would say everyone should play.
I have a weird story with Outer Wilds. I have it on, I feel like, all my systems.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can never truly grasp how you control the spaceship.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a funky scheme. And that's why I never really got into it. So to kind of add a little bit to your Tunic, there's another game that was released last year. It's about like this adventurous fox. It's also very good.
Yeah.
It's not really on top of a lot of raiders, but it's interesting. So a couple more questions. What fascinates you about this industry, video games?
I would say that we make something that seems quite impossible to do happen. Like we are creating art that can be manipulated by the viewer. Without any possibility to change that when we have released, together with that you work with like people that are very different from you. Like you have like the programmers, you have the musicians, you have the artists, and so on. And that all of those kind of like personalities needs to be able to kind of like see the importance from each other's thing, basically. And I think that's kind of like the magic of creating video games.
And final question that we ask a lot to all of our guests is, what do your parents think about your work now? And what did they think about it when you first kind of started this journey?
My parents have always been kind of supportive, even if they don't understand like it from the beginning. Like most people, I think you see the parents think that you are programming like the art or so on. But I've actually shown them like how all the programs works and stuff like that. So I think they get a bigger appreciation for it now when they see kind of like how it works and so on.
Have you tried showing them Last of Us?
No, I think that's too taking it too far. I would say I think it's kind of hard to make. I mean, when I was a kid, I forced my mom to play like the Super Mario go-kart games and stuff like that with me, or FIFA. But I would say probably like seeing they see it as art, and I think for them it's fun that I kind of went the way I wanted to go. It was not always planned to do art for me. Like I had a other path, but then it became art, and I'm happy that I took this path.
Actually, a lot of people that we talk to are saying that their parents were actually very supportive.
Mm.
I don't hear people saying like, oh no, they're like, they don't talk to me because I do video games. Most of them are like very kind of cautious, and they support their kids, and I guess it speaks for the parents, obviously, who are great, but also kind of speaks to the industry. It seems like, you know, when you were talking about Mario and so on, and I feel like there was this cartoon from some magazine flying around the internet a couple of months ago where it's like the kid is playing games near the TV, and they're saying, oh, it's bright future ahead of him, and people will be looking to hire great Super Mario players. But I feel like this perception changed in a way, although, I mean, video games are still like a long way to go in terms of kind of perception as something like a cinema would say, right? Yeah. But it's definitely better than it was before, right? Because before it was like games are usually like for dorks and like nobody plays them or they're weird and kind of like all that. And now it's kind of like shifting. But
I think one reason is that that you have like the first generation with kids that grew up with games in the 80s, like 70s, 80s, 90s. Like they are parents now, and I think that kind of shapes a little bit the zeitgeist right now for what video games can be and are.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's definitely shifting, and I can see from like my daughter who's like 4, she likes to kind of watch video games in a way, but it's not that she's like super invested. So for her, it's like there's so many other things around than, you know, just playing, kind of sitting at the table. She kind of enjoy it like a little bit, like especially games like Stray, where it's like a cute cat
walking around,
and she's also meowing, so you can play with that. But overall, she's like not really that into it. But
it's kind of cool with also like my sisters has kids, and they are playing kind of like the game I grew up with, like Pokemon, for example. That is still like a very big. A big game, and that kind of connects me with them. Like like my knowledge from that game when I was a kid is still kind of relevant. And you have the same with Super Mario that's been here from the 80s basically, and still relevant. And I think that's kind of like a cool thing also that we have like a whole generation of games staying kind of relevant.
Totally. Jacob, well, we're almost out of time. The hour flew by very quickly. I want to thank you for your time and for joining us and talking about Vertex and a little bit about your career. We'll leave the links in the description in terms of if people want to check it out. And yeah, just thank you so much, and I hope to see new amazing games from you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks for enjoying another episode of the 80 Level Roundtable podcast. Check out upcoming episodes on the 80 Level website at 80.lv. Join our career site at 80.lv/RFP. And share our podcast with friends and on your social networks.